season, college football, and more. Barrett Salee, not only a columnist with CBS Sports, but he's also a co-host on ESPNU on SiriusXM Radio. Barrett, thank you as always, and welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Johnny.
And I got into your conversation again about Central Florida. You love bringing up Central Florida, don't you?
Central Florida loves bringing up Central Florida.
Have they gotten on your
nobody who loves Central Florida more than Central Florida? That's for sure.
Have they gotten on your nerves? I like the what you had talked about last week is the fact that they are like the little boy that wants to scream, wants to be a part of the party, wants to be there without earning the place at the seat at the table. It kind of reminds me of all those years at, you know, holiday get-togethers, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and I was always at the little kids' table, and then when I finally earned that spot at the adult table, it was just like, oh, so this is what this is about.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing is that UCF has such an overinflated view of self-worth that it thinks it's on par with Florida right now in terms of program. Now, top 10 team, top 10 program, completely different conversation. UCF is not even close to a top 30 or 40 program right now. But yet it seems to think that it has the clout to demand a home and home with Florida. That is proof to me that UCF really has no interest in becoming a big boy. All it has is interest in trying to use its platform as it is to gain access and change the system. And I've said for months that UCF has taken the wrong approach to what their argument is. Their argument should not be, if they really truly wanted to be a big boy, their argument should not be, hey, let's change the playoff structure. Their argument should be, let's get into a Power Five conference. But instead, they've tried to build this facade like they're this incredible historic program that, you know, most teams are scared of at the Power Five level. But really, when the chance presents itself, like Florida has given them, you know, to prove it, they back down. So it's to me, it's for lack of a better term, it's the little kid in class who talks a big game, but then when the big bully steps up to try to fight him, he backs down quickly.
I mean, look, the bottom line is you look at the resume, and yeah, great that you've won every game that was presented to you over the last 2 years, but the bottom line is how many Power 5 conference teams have you taken care of business, and especially how many back-to-back weeks that you've been able to pull that off, and oh, you haven't done that. You haven't played anybody in back-to-back weeks.
No, they haven't. To UCF's credit, they've done a pretty decent job historically of scheduling, you know, somewhat decent opponents. And I think the fact that they're in a recruiting hotbed really has helped that. But I think it's really telling that after UCF has arrived on the national stage, it doesn't take the same, you know, path towards scheduling games. Florida and UCF, that 2-for-1 can happen right now. It can be scheduled right this very instant, and UCF isn't doing it. And you flip it over and remember what happened when Boise State arrived. Boise State was anybody, anytime, anywhere before it arrived. Then the obvious hook and ladder happened. And after that, Boise State played Ole Miss in Atlanta, played Georgia in Atlanta, played a 2-for-1 with Washington State, played a 2-for-1 against Virginia Tech. One of those games was in Landover. Is in the midst of like a, well, there was one home and home with Oregon, but then there's, I think, a 3-for-6 or a 3-for-5 series coming up in the next 10 years. So Boise State, when it arrived, said, you know what, let's go beat anybody, anytime, anywhere. And they haven't done that because, obviously, group of five teams are not, you know, really capable of doing that on a week-in, week-out basis. But UCF doesn't want to try. And I think that's very telling as to the arrogance it has from an administrative standpoint and the lack of confidence it has in actually being a major program in college football.
Let me ask you this. You know, MTSU this year, let's just say that MTSU was Central Florida last year, going unbeaten, and then you look at MTSU's schedule this year where three of their non-conference games were teams in the SEC. They played Vanderbilt, Georgia, and Kentucky. Let's just say that if MTSU was Central Florida with this year's MTSU schedule, would they have at least opened up that conversation a little more if they were able to run the table against Georgia, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt, along with being, say, Conference USA champs?
Yeah, certainly. You know, that, and Georgia obviously was a great team. I don't think necessarily that MTSU thought Kentucky would be Kentucky when they scheduled that game. But,
right.
You know, but yeah, I mean, that if you do that, then that's proof that you know are capable of competing. And yeah, I mean, like the American or the Sun Belt or the CUSA or whatever, like those teams are good teams. The schedules are good, relatively speaking, you know, within the competition. But when you combine that with what MTSU did this year, you know, that would be enough to prove to a lot of people that you belong. The truth of the matter is UCF doesn't have the desire to do that. Middle does. And I think that speaks volumes.
I was watching Fresno State and Arizona State, and look, there's a pretty decent list of you know, individuals that helped their team achieve the success that they were able to enjoy this year, and that's why we're talking about their teams in bowl games. And yet they're, you know, they're not going to be playing the bowl game, and they're, you know, declared for the NFL draft. So I'm watching Arizona State and Fresno State, and right there, you know, where, you know, at that point, Arizona State within a score of Fresno State, and you see Enequil Harry. You know, he's one of the best wide receivers, not only in the Pac-12, but in the country. I get that. At what point is that a distraction when you look over and you see him and his, you know, he's not injured, he's, you know, wearing the clothes, and you know that you could use him out there?
It's not. It never will be. Most players on that roster understand his decision, and all the players on that roster are totally fine with his decision to stay. Coaches are as well. And in fact, I would argue that his presence on the sideline actually is a massive, massive benefit to Arizona State and Herm Edwards long-term as a program. When high school kids watch that Las Vegas Bowl, and they, you know, paid attention to what was going on, they're not going to remember the final score. And even if they do, they're not going to care about the final score. What they will care about is the fact that this freak of a receiver, N'Keal Harry, played so dang well at Arizona State that he earned the right to make the decision to skip a bowl game because his draft stock would not be impacted. And that is that's the benefit. That's why those players are allowed on the sideline. That's why Royce Freeman in last year's Las Vegas Bowl wasn't only on the sideline, but was doing everything he possibly could to get the cameras on him, because it's a huge benefit to the school. So, yeah, no, there's no distraction whatsoever. I mean, I've talked to countless players about this and coaches about this. Not a single one of them have any problem with players leaving early. There are ones like Ed Orgeron who says they'd prefer if players stayed, but of course they say that. Of course they prefer it if a player would be playing in a bowl game, because, you know, they want to win. But they are totally fine with that player being around the program and totally understand the decision to not play the bowl game. It's not like there's any animosity ever between any of those decisions.
Ed Orgeron also said that he had wished that Greedy Williams had had that final conversation with him before the announcement came out.
If that happens, then yeah, I mean, that's more a problem with communication than right. The actual decision. I mean, that the decision, Ed Orgeron, I'm sure, you know, would rather like to have him out against UCF, but he understands how big of a deal that is for Greedy, for his program and the spotlight. But yeah, I mean, in the moment, if the player doesn't tell his coach about it, yeah, he has a right to be mad about that for sure.
Which team moving forward do you think is going to be impacted the most by one of these players not participating in the bowl? I mean, there's Will Grier, quarterback West Virginia. That would be obviously the one that I would probably have circled. There's Ed Oliver, for example, as far as the defensive front there for Houston. I mentioned Greedy Williams, certainly a key part of that secondary for LSU. Which team you think will be impacted most by a player not playing in the bowl game?
Yeah, without a doubt, Grier. I mean, most important position, star quarterback, you know, that's a big deal in terms of what that, you know, what happens in that game. And I'm not exactly sure, but I think the line moved about 3.5 points when that announcement was made by Will Grier. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's quarterback. Houston and Ed Oliver, they played with him without him pretty much all of November. So while they'd rather have him out there, I'm sure, you know, they know how to operate without him against some pretty decent teams, at least comparable teams to what they are. Greedy, I don't think will be a huge decision, problem, even though they don't have a ton of depth at LSU. I don't necessarily think UCF's quarterback can complete a ton of passes anyway. So I think without a doubt it's Will Grier. And, I think for him, it's a decision that's rather unique. I don't think we've had any quarterbacks of that, ilk decide to bow out of games for bowl season. So it'll be interesting to see how the scouts view that, down the road. I don't think they'll view it any differently, especially considering he's going to play in the Senior Bowl. I think that is I wouldn't say it's a precedent. I think it's just sort of an extension the can being kicked further down the road to see, what the reaction from the scouts will be. But I don't think it'll be a big deal.